Welcome to Plans Are Booked, a podcast for every reader. I'm Molly Geller.
I'm Stephanie Blackburn.
And I'm Caitlin Madison. Welcome to chapter 23.
23?
Yeah, 23.
Michael Jordan chapter.
So we just podcasted a couple of days ago, but Molly and Steph like have already had things happen to them. Meanwhile, I've just like been finishing my report cards. And I watched the Celtics lose a really bad game last night. They were leading by 30 at the half, and they lost by 1 point. They just, like, absolutely choked in the second half. It was ridiculous. And that's it. I don't really have anything else going on.
Okay. Steph had an exciting start to her day, which I have been waiting to hear about.
So a couple weeks ago, Olivia Bean, shout out to her, she knows I'm not on Facebook, and so she saw this request for volunteers, sent it to me as a screenshot and was like, I'm pretty sure that you'd be into this. And I was like, yes, I would. Thank you so much. So this is so random, but the person who posted it lives in my hometown of Pepperell, Massachusetts. Didn't grow up there, so we've never met, but she's a physical therapist, mostly dealing with children with disabilities, and she does physical therapy on horses. So she put out a request for horse handlers because they're someone leading the horse. And then she and another volunteer are on either side in case the child should decide to dismount or fall over or what have you. So I went today as the sort of orientation, I guess you'd say. And the two other volunteers are our parents' age, both retired, wanted something that would help them get in their daily steps. They're both lovely. They've been doing it for a couple of years. And I loved both ponies that I'm going to be working with. And my Thursday mornings, I will be there probably from 8 o'clock till noon.
What are the ponies' names?
Willie and Mickey. They're both, they look like they're both paint horses, but I can't be sure about that. And they are owned by a 9-year-old who I have not met. And she requested her mother shave a heart into the hindquarters of Willie. And when I mentioned it to Marissa, she goes, oh, just like My Little Pony.
Oh my God.
Next thing you know, he's going to have purple hair.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, so my family has a farm and they have horses, and it was a dairy farm when my dad was a kid. So I should know a lot more than I do, but I don't. I've been on a horse twice in my entire life and I hated every moment of it, mainly because I felt like I wasn't in control. And also you're pretty far up off the ground, which I don't like. And I just realized I didn't really trust the horse. And if the horse could sense that, I was like, I'm doomed. So that was the end of that. But my cousins are like really into it. And like my aunt's really into it. And if people are into it, it's like you're really into it. Like it's not, you're not just like a little bit into horses. It's like you're actually a horse girl, which actually in my family was an insult for a long time. Because my brother went to an all boys school, and the sister school was notorious for like having horse girls. And Brad was like, I can remember when he was like in middle school and like going to dances, and he's like, I'm just not into these horse girls. Like, I don't want to date a horse girl. And I was like, oh my God. And that's just what I think of now.
I did actually horseback ride for a long time as part of summer camp every year, which was very cool that was like even available. I always enjoyed it. I always had a good time, but I just wasn't like great at it. And like the older we got, like there were girls who were real good and who could like do jumps, and like they would allow them to go into other rings. And, you know, I'm an achiever. If I'm not the best at something, I don't want to do it. So when I realized I wasn't great at it, I was like, this has been fun. See y'all later. And I would say the last time I was probably like 14 maybe, and then I hung up my boots.
Let me just tell you the level of horse girl that I was growing up. The first horse I ever rode, I think I was maybe 6 or 7, and it was a trail ride that my mom took me on in Acton. Her name was Candy. I went home, immediately drew a picture of her. kept it on my bulletin board for many years. I used to, when I wasn't riding, take the two stools from the kitchen, put a blanket over them, create stirrups out of a jump rope, and pretend ride.
This is very believable.
This is very what?
Believable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then when I got older and actually started riding in elementary, middle school, my horseback riding instructor lived catty corner to my Nana's house. So I'd take the bus to my Nana's house. She would come pick me up and we would go horseback riding and stopped in my late 20s because I just couldn't afford it anymore. So here we are. It's going to make my heart really happy to, like, even though I'm not riding, I'm spending 3 hours a week with horses, and I get to see, like, I have no idea what it's going to be like seeing these kids do physical therapy who are, like, mobily challenged on horseback. Apparently there's a young adult who's blind and he prefers to ride backwards, which it's going to be a hoot. I'm excited.
I'm excited for more updates about this as it goes on.
I am too. I think that I really want to know more about these other people that are volunteers, because I feel like they're going to be really cool.
Their names.
I feel like they're going to be fun.
They're both like white-haired ladies.
Of course.
One of them is pretty quiet, but she's like kind of stern looking. And the other one is like a chatty Kathy.
And all I can discover that they're like independently wealthy, because I feel like you are.
One of them lives in Newton, because I mentioned Cabot's. And one lives in Arlington, so.
Okay, well, first of all, for those who may not know, Cabot's is a institution, really, in Newtonville, Massachusetts, which serves ice cream sundaes the size of a human head. And I think it is a good opening, like, bonding moment for anyone you learn is from there. If they don't like it, then they're not your kind of person.
She knows the family.
But
so.
Of course. But of course, which is actually quite a good segue to what I was going to share since we all last gathered. Those who've been listening for a while know that dining out is like a huge joy maker for me. And I was just like clicking around on Instagram, and a guy that Steph and I both know, his name is Brian, who's an amazing restaurant food photographer, had posted from a place I'd never heard of called the Gufo. And I was like, what is this? I feel like usually when he shares about things, it's a place like we already know and love that's refreshing their menu or has renovated the restaurant. But this, I didn't recognize at all. So it's the same people who own SRV downtown, which is Italian, and I've not been to, but I've heard great things about. So I was like, okay. So I messaged my twin cousins who live very close to the restaurant. And I was like, have you been here? Do you want to go? They hadn't been, but there were a bunch of reservations open, so we just snagged them. This restaurant from the outside looks like it's in like an abandoned office building. Like you would just not from the street think that anything special is going on in there. And you go in through the front door to the host stand, which is in this weird like empty space where they do like all their takeout arranging of all those orders. And their pizza oven is there. But you kind of have to walk down a hallway to get into the dining room. When you turn the corner, it's like this huge, beautiful, feels like your downtown restaurant. Gorgeous wall color. Beautiful, huge plants, big U-shaped bar, just like stunning. Like I honestly was like, whoa, am I in the South End? Like this is beautiful. It's Italian. We had the broccoli Caesar, which was excellent. The cacio e pepe arancini, which is like, if you want to get me to do anything, just like order me that. We split a pizza, two pastas, and then we had two desserts. Now, it's an open kitchen, so from our seat, we could see everything coming over the island, and that's how we decided which desserts to get, because we kept seeing them come over. I loved it. Free parking on the street in Cambridge. It was Sunday night, so like that was also a great, for those who aren't from Massachusetts, it's still Puritan times, and you don't have to pay for anything on Sunday, so you can just park on the street. And it's been a while, I feel like, since I went to somewhere like unheard of, totally new. And it just reminded me like what a fun experience that is when it turns out to be great. Like you didn't know about it. You sit down, it's 10 out of 10. And now I feel like I have another place to bring people when they visit from out of town.
My mouth was like watering looking at the photos. Gufo, is that what you said it's called?
Which apparently means owl in Italian.
G-U-F-O.
Exactly.
Border Square.
It's on Cambridge Street between Inman Square and the Leechmere T station. So it's kind of in between neighborhoods.
Oh, okay. That tracks now for the building that you're describing. Because I was like, where is there a building in Porter or Kendall or like anywhere in that area that looks like that still.
It's this 3-story brick building that just looks empty. And in fact, my cousins were standing outside of it waiting for me. And they're like, this is it, right? I was like, I think. Let's just go in and see what we see. But a true hidden gem. And I'm sure now that I talked about it and posted about it, more people will show up there. But it was really easy to get a reservation. They had tons of open times. They also do brunch. And they have an outdoor patio. So when it gets warmer, I feel like that'd be
Put that on the sketch.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. Got it. Noted. Well, that was a lot of joy. That was a lot of horses and new restaurants and report cards are done. And now we're going to switch it up a little bit and we're going to segue into our topic of the week, which is sometimes we do topics, sometimes we do specific books. We decided for this episode we would do a topic, and the topic is tearjerkers, books that made us cry. And I don't know when we came, I think when we first started cooking up ideas for this podcast, I think it's been on the list like since November, and we just haven't done it yet. And I don't want to say that we're avoiding it, because honestly, I kind of forgot that it was on the list. And then we returned to the list recently and I was like, ooh, this would be a good one because I know we all have read books like this.
I feel like we were saving it. Just like sometimes you just need to have a good cry. So we were saving it for the moment.
And also, it's kind of raining and gross today. And I feel like it like matches the tone.
Yeah, I'm crying that it's like fake spring. We got faked out. It's like barely 40 degrees and raining. It's disgusting. But I'm not mad about it or anything. So we pick books that made us cry. I've already seen Steph's stack, and there's definitely like a little bit of a motif among what makes her cry. My books have a little bit of a motif. I have no idea if Molly's do, which I'm very interested in, because there's all sorts of reasons you can cry. You can cry because somebody dies. You could cry because somebody's missing someone. You could cry because somebody breaks up. Like,
I would also say I got a text from Molly when she was reading something semi-recently where she said, did I make you cry, or you almost cried because you were so worried that there wouldn't be a happy resolution? So sometimes there's reading, like a relief cry.
Yes. I was reading the draft of Steph's current manuscript, and there was a moment where I thought things were going to go a certain way, and I was extremely upset about it, and I was getting very watery.
Yep. That I do remember that now. So whatever it's called, what does Superman call it? Kryptonite. That's just like waterworks galore, like don't even. Adolescent boys in difficult situations get me. I don't know why. And I have never, ever in my life cried any harder than in watching the movie. Oh my gosh, what is the name of it? Something about building a house.
Life is a house.
Life is a house. Ugh. I've only watched it one time.
Same.
Because I almost threw up. I was crying so hard that I was like, I can never watch this again. And it's Hayden Christensen and Kevin Kline. And basically, Hayden Christensen's character is like a teenage boy. The first scene of the whole movie, he's like huffing a paint can in his closet and trying to like get high and asphyxiate himself. And he's like, you know, got like a dog collar on, and he's dyed his hair black. And like, he's really like, he's going through something and is not being very nice about it in the process. And so his mom's like, I don't really know what to do with him anymore. And she ships him off to go live with his dad, Kevin Kline. And Kevin Kline is in the process of building a house from scratch, which he doesn't really know how to do. He like sort of knows how to do it, but not really. And so he and his son that he doesn't know very well bond while they are building this house. And then there's a big plot twist at the end. And you basically like lose your fucking mind. Sorry for the F-bomb. It's that bad though. And so I think I saw that movie maybe when I was in high school. And I think ever since then, those types of stories just like rip me to shreds. So I have two books to discuss that made me feel the same way. The first one is called Orbiting Jupiter, which Gary D. Schmidt wrote, and he has written a ton of books for middle and high school age students. I don't know if I would call him YA because I feel like that's only associated with teenagers, and he really does like more middle grade, preteen, adolescent, whatever you want to call that. And this book, it's very short. It is not long at all. Very quick read. I think I read it in one day. And it's about a boy who's in eighth grade who has had like a very traumatic life. And he is getting fostered by this very lovely, ordinary family. And there's all these rumors that are going on around the school about him because he's had like a violent past and he's been in juvie. And there's a rumor that he has a daughter, which is true. And he's like 14 years old. And he's never been able to meet her because of all these traumatic things that have happened. And he's like been in juvie and like he just hasn't been allowed to meet her. And so he's trying to live with this family, start going to school in this new town. I forget if it takes place in New Hampshire or Maine. And he's trying to like get it together basically because he's like, I have a daughter and I would really like to meet her. And like, I've been in all these bad situations and I've kind of like fight my way through them. And now everybody thinks I'm this really bad kid and I'm like misunderstood and that nobody has really ever thrown me a bone and la da 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 da. And then you start to find out more about the mother of his baby and what her whole story is and how they met each other and like that whole backstory. And the whole time he's like trying to fit in at this school and doesn't really like know anybody. And there's other teen kids in the foster family that are like trying to help him. And it's just like, it's one of those stories where you see how people become products of their environment and how hard they have to fight to not repeat the past. And it doesn't have a happy ending. It just straight up doesn't. And it's very jarring and it's real and it's raw and the characters are so good and you care about a lot of them in different ways. And it really packs a punch. And I don't even think the book's 200 pages long. Like it's really like it's. And I've never known who to recommend it to, honestly. Like, I can't teach it. I mean, I probably could at the school I'm at now, but the school that I was at, I don't think I could have. It deals with a lot of triggering stuff. And I don't really know that I am the right person or that I'm equipped to have a conversation about an eighth grader who's a dad. You know what I mean? Like, that's a lot. And so it's a book that I would love to have a conversation with young people about, but I just don't know where it fits or who should give it to somebody or if you should wait until you're an adult to read it and then maybe you'll like think a little bit more about what kids are going through. Like, I don't know who it's for because it's really difficult to read. But it's excellent. It's really, really good. And if that's not your cup of tea, none of his other books are like that. That's like a heavy, heavy book. And his other books are really, really good. I think I've read all of his books and he has quite a few. So Gary D. Schmidt, shout out to him. The other one is called Forgive Me, Leonard Peacock. And it is written by the same author that wrote Silver Linings Playbook. If you have seen that movie with Bradley Cooper and Jennifer Lawrence and Robert De Niro and a million other people. So Matthew Quick is the author. I had seen the movie and then I got this book. I had never read the book Silver Linings Playbook. And I think that I don't really know anything about Matthew Quick, but my guess is he has some personal experience with mental illness, either himself or people in his family, because that is a lot of what Silver Linings Playbook is about. And then with Forgive Me, Leonard Peacock, that follows a boy on his 18th birthday and nobody remembers his birthday. And he has like no relationship with his dad. His mom's like a workaholic. He doesn't really have any friends. And for a long time, he has decided that this is going to be his last day on earth. And so the whole book is him going around living this day, knowing how it's going to end. And as the reader, you don't know if there's anybody that is going to come along and make him change his mind. And so you have a lot of these like pauses and like kind of holding your breath, and you're like, and a lot of it, some of it reminds me of 13 Reasons Why, which was like a really popular book and also a TV show. And it's not the suicide aspect to it. It's that, you know, it's almost like, you know, where it ends. And I'm not going to tell you what happens in the book because that's like part of the whole experience, but they're just, you have a moment when you're reading it and you're like, this kid has a really lonely life and is really not seen by very many people, and I kind of understand why he's arrived at this. And that's almost sadder than the whole aspect of him deciding to do this. And so then you kind of have to grapple with that. And again, don't know who this book goes to. I don't know. It's another book that I would love to talk to people about because I don't know anybody else that's read it. And it's a really powerful book. And I think that it's really important to start having conversations that involve like, yeah, I felt really desperate and I felt really lonely, and or I felt like I was really seen, and then all of a sudden this person dumped me and I didn't have any of these friends anymore. You know, like there's just so many. And I feel like a lot of us had that at some point in our lives, but it might have been like very brief. And for some kids, it's not brief at all. And I think particularly for kids that have to move around or are thrown into different environments and situations, it's sometimes really excruciatingly long. So those are the two books. Forgive Me, Leonard Peacock. I don't know if I would, I'm not going to say it has a happy or a sad ending. Orbiting Jupiter, you're going to be gutted. This one is kind of like happy and sad, bittersweet, mixed bag kind of at the end. Both really well written. Both about teenage boys really going through it. And maybe I'm like attracted to these types of tearjerkers because I've never been a teenage boy, and like I teach teenage boys and I'm curious about them and like how they learn and how they deal with things. And yeah, so those were my two.
Based on just what you described of the Leonard Peacock premise, I feel like I would cry at that, even without knowing how it ends. I just, based on what you shared about the overall arc of the story, I feel like it would be hard not to be like moved
and, like,
by that.
He befriends his elderly neighbor who also doesn't really have a lot of people in his life, and that connection is really interesting because they're both quote unquote kind of at the end of their lives, but only one of them really is physically at the, you know what I mean? Like, but they both feel like they're at the end. It's very, very good.
Okay. I'm feeling heavy just like listening to.
Yeah.
I should preface that I cry very easily at everything, including commercials. So I don't know that I'm a good barometer of what is worthy of tears or not. But I feel like my picks, most people would have an emotional response to. My first one is The Time Traveler's Wife by Audrey Niffenegger. And if you haven't read this book, and maybe you're like, I'm not really into time travel, I don't care. You're going to love it.
I cried during this one.
This is a must, I feel like.
And I honestly, there are very few adaptations that I feel emotionally carry over what it should from the page to the screen. God bless Rachel McAdams, because she destroyed me in that movie many times over. I'm not really normally a fan of time travel, I have to say. I like linear stories. This is not a linear story, and that drives me crazy because I have trouble figuring out where I am in the story. But I don't even know what to say about this book.
It has a big, blossomed, well-grown, well-cared-for romance.
Well, did you guys watch the HBO version of it that came out last year?
I didn't.
Oh, I didn't either.
So I did, and in, I think it was the first episode, I can't even think of the character's name.
Something scandalous happened, Henry. I remember.
Well, no, it's when Henry first meets child version of Claire, and in the HBO version, they made like a pun about grooming, because he meets her when he's in his 40s, I think, at that point. She's 10 or something. And, you know, that is kind of uncomfortable to talk about nowadays. But they did an okay job. It's just the original is just beautiful. If you don't know the story, it is about a male and a female. Henry travels through time. It is a genetic thing that he gets from his father. He has no control over it. He doesn't know where he's going to end up, and he always ends up naked when he lands, whatever time or place that is. He meets Claire when she is a child at her childhood home, and they create this sort of relationship where it's hard to explain because he's coming from all different time periods. So sometimes he knows her before she knows him, but then there's times where she knows him and it's too confusing. But their friendship grows as she saves her father's clothes for him so that he will not be naked when he comes. And then we get to a point where she's finally an adult and meets him, and they fall in love and have this love story that is tragic and heartbreaking, but also beautiful and big. And it's just a really lovely, lovely, lovely story. My second one is probably not surprising whatsoever, because obviously I included an animal book. I have a lot of animal books. Most of them have made me cry. And this one I think everyone knows. It's Marley and Me. Can I tell you, I pulled this off the shelf the other day in preparation for this, flipped to the back just to be like, let's remember this, and immediately started crying.
What?
Because I wanted to like remember. Obviously, we know how it ends, especially if you've seen the movie, but I just wanted to remember bits, and it was like it clearly has imprinted on my heart. If you don't know Marley and Me, it is a beautiful memoir of a first-time pet parent going through the struggles of picking out a puppy and a dog that puts every single thing in its mouth, including an engagement ring. And but it's also a story of a family growing and the struggles of that. I wanted to include The Art of Racing in the Rain because that's a similar sort of story, but different. Because that one also did make me bawl my eyes out. Anyways, anything with any sort of animal is going to make me cry. And then my last one, I would implore everyone to read. It is a beautiful, beautiful memoir. It is The Bright Hour, a memoir of living and dying by Nina Riggs. I feel like this was, I don't know how many years ago this came out. This was like everywhere, I feel like. So she is the granddaughter of Ralph Waldo Emerson. She writes like him. She was a beautiful, beautiful writer. And she wrote this knowing she was dying. I can't even talk about it because I'll just start crying. But it's so beautiful. I'm getting choked up just thinking about it.
I remember when you read that because you were telling me about it. I think
we met somewhere. I was like sitting in the parking lot of Porter Square before meeting you for a meal. And I think I was like crying in my car.
I just remember you being like, this is one of the most like beautiful, moving things I've ever read. I can't get over the fact that this happened. Like, she decided to do this. I didn't remember the Ralph Waldo Emerson connection, but mm-hmm. I distinctly remember when you finished that book that like you were, I don't know if like transformed is a too powerful a word, but just that like it really left a strong impression.
I honestly couldn't even tell you what she's talking about.
I was going to say, so what's the book about?
I literally couldn't tell you. I think it's she's a young mother at the time of diagnosis. I think I could be misremembering, but I think she had already gone through cancer, thought she was okay, had kids. I could totally be misremembering this, and then gets diagnosed again. And this time it's terminal and decided I need to write this book before I pass. And I will say that it's finished by her husband, which is the part that gets me. So, yeah, it's just beautiful. If you love beautiful writing, I'm not a memoir person, but this memoir, like, did me in.
Okay, I'm just like laughing internally to myself for how perfectly you teed me up for my selections, which you did not know because I didn't share my picks before we started recording. In the very first episode of this podcast, I talked about memoirs as being one of my favorite genres. So two of my picks are from that realm. The first one is called When Breath Becomes Air, which is by Paul Kalanithi, who was a neurosurgeon who had incredible physical and mental health, was at the top of his field, and all of a sudden was diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer. Similar to what you just explained, he decided to write about it and knowing he was going to not survive this. And it talks about the beginning of his life, his decision to become a doctor, meeting his wife, their discussion around whether or not they should have a child, knowing that he would not be around for most of her life. I won't say what wound up happening, but similar to what you just said about The Bright Hour, he does pass before the book is finished. His wife writes the remainder and the epilogue. I got to the back half of this book while on an airplane, and when I tell you, I was ugly crying. Like, people were looking at me. I couldn't control myself. Like, I just didn't, I mean, I guess I should have known it was going to be a hard ending, but there was something about the fact that to honor his life, she like pushed through to do this thing for him and to help him like bring this project over the finish line. And this is kind of an interesting connection. So his wife's name is Lucy. She's the twin sister of Joanna Goddard, who writes a very famous blog called Cup of Joe. And Joanna, yeah, and Joanna gave Lucy many opportunities over the years to share about her husband, about her grief process. And I've actually found that to be some of like the most moving content that has ever been shared on Cup of Joe is the stuff that comes from Lucy. It was just interesting that like not only did she live through this and then helping to promote the book, but then her sister had this huge platform that reaches millions of women talking about what it's like to be a young widow, what it's like to try to move forward after that. She did an interview about would she ever consider dating again. This was like years later. But anyway, this book, of all the books, when we decided we were definitely going to do this topic today, I was like, this is in the number one position. I was destroyed in a public place by this book.
Did he give a really famous commencement speech as well?
I don't know.
Was he affiliated with a college?
What a good question.
I want to say Stanford. I think I'm thinking of the right person, but I'll look it up.
My second choice, also a memoir, is called Crying in H Mart, which is by Michelle Zahner.
It's in my TBR replies.
Oh, okay. So I won't say like too much about it because I don't.
It's also in mine.
Oh boy.
Because okay. I think that we have two copies by accident because Molly and I both bought it.
Okay.
But it's okay. I know a lot about what it's. It's fine. And we don't spoil anything for our listeners anyway. So
let me think about how I want to explain this in a way that will not say too much. Basically, Michelle is talking about her relationship with her mom, who is also actively dying, and how they don't always see eye to eye. She grew up in a pretty strict Asian household, and she's a musician, and not like a cellist or a violinist, like a punk musician. And she is trying to find common ground with her mom in these final months. And the thing that they bond over is making food together. So I felt like it was the type of thing where I cried because it was just like so moving the way they tried to figure out a way to like speak to each other and make new memories and just stuff that she would be able to do even after her mom passed. And because she's a musician, she also just has like a gift for words and the rhythm of words and just beautiful. After I read it, I felt like I talked about it to anybody who would listen for like the next 6 months. So when you do read it, we can revisit what you think. My final one is actually a fiction book. It's called A Place for Us. It's by Fatima Farhin Mirza. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. This was the first book out of the Sarah Jessica Parker imprint, which is how I found out about it. It is about a Muslim family that moves to the United States and has a very difficult time kind of finding their footing here, including they have 3 children and the youngest son develops a substance abuse problem. And they all come back together many years later when the oldest daughter is getting married. And everyone is like on pins and needles the entire time about the youngest son. Like, is he going to get too drunk? Is he going to ruin this for everybody? And they wind up sort of in emotionally charged conversations, kind of unpacking all of the hardships of their relationships about the move and about the cultural transitions and about the youngest son sort of being ousted from the family. And there are just so many conversations where your heart just breaks into a million pieces, that this life for each of these family members, the parents and the kids, is so freaking hard, and that they couldn't like tell each other how bad it really was because they didn't want to make it worse for anybody. And I was just so like, I don't know, I keep saying moved, but like, that's how I felt. I was just like, God, this is so freaking hard. And like, there are so many families who experience that, where coming here is just not at all what they thought it was going to be. And it tears people apart. And I also just think many families have one either parent figure or sibling that is an outcast, and it's very painful and the relationships are strained. And it just, I think it will be relatable to people in a lot of ways, but it's definitely not an easy read. And I think she writes so beautifully that that's what keeps you going, is like her prose is so special that you can push through the hard stuff, because it is a beautiful experience to get to the end.
I have two things. One, if you like that book, then you should, I haven't read it, but it sounds, it has a lot of similarities to All My Rage by Saba Tahir that I just had to read for my class. I think that this is like the teenager version, like the YA version of that book. And that book did make me tear up, and I almost talked about it, but I also want to do an episode about that book, so I didn't put it on my list. The other thing I want to say is the reason I bought Crying in H Mart is because Michelle, the author of that book, her stage name is Japanese Breakfast, and I really like that band, and I've seen Japanese Breakfast before, and they were supposed to be at Newport Folk Fest one year and basically got all messed up because I think people in her band had COVID, and so she was supposed to be on Friday, or maybe it was her. There were two groups that like had to switch days they were performing, and one of them was because of COVID and one was because of a canceled flight, and I can't remember which her band was. But anyways, she got put on Sunday up against somebody else that I wanted to see, and so then I did see her another time. But that's why I bought that book. I haven't read it yet, but I bought it because I know her as Japanese Breakfast. And I was like, oh, cool, she has a book. And then everybody was like, it's so moving and so sad and really like, you have to be like mentally prepared for it. And I was like, oh, and then it just kept getting shoved further and further down the TBR. But what are you going to do? What's everyone reading?
I'm currently in the midst of a racist book club book that I picked up a week or two ago when Caitlin and I had an H Mart BNN day. What's interesting about this book, I don't want to tell too much because I think it would be interesting to do an episode about it. Before, or I think I was maybe five pages in, I made the mistake of going to Goodreads just to see if anyone I knew had read it, but then I started reading the reviews. It does not have good reviews. Like a lot of like, Reese, are you okay? Did you really mean to like put this on your list type thing? Yeah.
But then Steph stayed up reading it last night.
Yeah, could not put it down last
night.
She's
almost done.
I'm worried that like maybe it takes a turn at the end. But what I wanted to say that's interesting is, so it's a present day and a past, and it alternates each chapter. The present is in the past tense and the past is in the present tense, which I feel like it must have a purpose and I haven't figured it out yet. But that's like an interesting choice.
It's very confusing.
I know.
Steph said there's also some characters that she's wondering, like, are these people only real to this person, or so are they actually there? And the then main, some things were confirmed.
The main character, Maya, in present day is coming off of a cold turkey stop to a Klonopin addiction, which I will say, from knowing someone who did that on her own, severe consequences of doing that without doctor supervision.
Yeah, you're supposed to wean off of things like that.
So she goes into it. Basically, I don't know sometimes if the things she's seeing are real or if they're hallucinations that are a reaction to basically weaning oneself off of a drug. But in the past, when she was about to graduate from high school, she met this older guy, and you can just tell there's something super dodgy about him, and she's missing hours of time that she spends with him. Like, she'll start off doing something totally normal, and then 5 hours have passed, and she's like, how did that happen type thing? Or she'll end up somewhere where she's like, how did we get here type thing?
And you're sure that she's not a ghost, right? Because I know you were saying that you were, some of the other people seem suspect, but like,
yeah, no, I think that's me just being like very suspicious okay. of everyone right, at this
got
point.
It. Got
but
it.
Basically, in present day, she finds a YouTube video where he and this young girl who look exactly like her, this is like CCTV footage of them in a diner, and the girl just dies, keels over in his presence and dies. And in the past, her best friend died in his presence. So there's something that I was like, is this a cult type book? I was worried that there was like magic involved or something. It doesn't seem like that.
That would explain the bad readings, though, if all of a sudden they're like, and this guy has a wand, and it's like, well, okay, that doesn't work.
No, it's very beautifully written. Quick chapters, everything ends on a cliffhanger, and I need to know what the heck is going on. I'm really hoping that this does not like take a turn that I'm like, no, this is, why did everyone give it like 2-star reviews is basically what I'm asking.
Just loving that you describe this character as dodgy. I'm still holding on to that word choice.
I'm only 5 pages in, but I'm reading Funny You Should Ask by Alyssa Sussman.
Woo-hoo.
It's a little bit of a homework assignment that I've had for a while. It's been in my TBR forever, and Molly and Steph really want to do an ep about it, so away I go. But it seems really charming, and I'm getting like Amy Sherman Palladino banter dialogue vibes just in 5 pages. So that feels good.
I read that entire book on 2 airplane flights from Boston to Minneapolis and Minneapolis to Jackson Hole. I ignored all the people that we were with. And I just committed to this book, and I just couldn't be stopped. I really was into it, and then I couldn't wait to pass it on, and I just feel like that is like a very I don't know that immersive is the right word, but it just hooked me right from the get.
I hope, have we mentioned on the pod that we're going to Jackson Hole? Oh, well, we're doing it. I'm the only one that hasn't gone, so now we're going and we're doing it. And I hope that I find a book for those flights that I'm just like completely enamored with.
Totally. Speaking of the West, my book is set in Montana. I'm reading Famous for a Living, which I mentioned at the end of last week's ep, is my blind date book that I unwrapped on air a couple weeks ago. So what page am I on? Jeez. Page 90. So this story is about an influencer who leaves New York City and goes to small town Montana. I have now learned that her uncle got her a job where she works for the Park Service. They have enlisted her to become the social media coordinator for the parks. She has to share a tiny one-room cabin with like a 22-year-old eager beaver park ranger. And my favorite moment of the beginning so far is she arrives in the dead of winter, and she booked a rental car for herself that is a convertible. So her uncle's like second in command from the Park Service has to come and rescue her because she drives it off the road.
Yeah. Okay. Yep.
So anyway, I'm loving it in a surprise to no one. And I mentioned this before, but they have these cool like interstitials between all the chapters where it shows her like taking Instagram pictures and it looks like the inside of an iPhone. And it's just very fun. I haven't seen that particular visual decision in a book that I've read before. This is very small font, which is why I'm only on page 90. I feel like in a different book, I'd be on page like 140. But I'm really enjoying it. I'm looking forward to what I know will inevitably be her falling in love with this gruff person that just rescued her. But I will follow along on the journey. So if you guys want to follow along with everything we're reading, all the books we discussed today, if you feel like a good cry, we will get the whole list up there for you on Instagram. We are at Plans Are Booked. We would love to chat with you, see what you're reading. Please comment, like, share. We appreciate every single moment of engagement. And you can write to us too. You can email us at plansarebooked@gmail.com. Let us know what you're reading, anything you'd like us to cover. We love hearing from you, so don't be shy.
Really don't be shy, because we're going to be doing some giveaways soon. So we want to hear from you, and we want you to participate in what we have going on. Until next time, our plans are booked.